Hello, I'm Steve Davis. Welcome to this podcast for Australia's National Centre for Vocational Education Research. Australia has seen major changes in the leadership and management of vocational education and training organisations over the last 15 years. Put simply, attention has shifted from educational leadership to the more generic leadership and management associated with functions like human resource management, financial management, and stakeholder relations. In the paper, Two Sides of the Same Coin, Leaders in Private Providers Juggling Educational and Business Imperatives, Roger Harris and Michelle Simons from the Centre for Research in Education, Equity and Work, University of South Australia, argue this shifting focus has not been without its consequences. I began by asking Michelle why leadership in private RTOs is an important area to study.
Well, the number of private providers operating in the vocational education and training sector in Australia has grown very rapidly. Some would argue too rapidly. And this has happened at a time when we actually know very little about how these private training organisations operate in their own right. Often when they've been studied in the past, they've been looked at in as a group with public registered training organisations such as TAFE. But because they've grown so, the numbers have grown so rapidly and now they're a very significant part of funded provision in the sector, it's really important for us to understand how they work and how the training market has impacted on the operation of these organisations, not just as an adjunct to the public providers, but in their own right.
As a percentage, how sizable is the private sector?
So I think overall we're talking about 5,000 or 6,000 private providers overall, and that number has grown very rapidly, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years as state and federal governments have looked to further prime the training market to ensure that they get good value for money and have an efficient training system.
So, Roger, what did you set out to do in this study?
Well, Steve, we were interested in the ways in which leaders and managers in private providers both understand leadership and carry it out, enact it in their daily work. We were interested in how they work through the tensions that are inherent in the challenges they face. And the challenges we believed would be their attempts to try and juggle the educational imperatives that they face with the business imperatives that they face. So how do they juggle them? How do they manage them? How do they balance them was our major issue.
And Roger, what did you learn about leadership in general?
I think the key thing we learned was that the objects or the emphases to which their leadership was directed differed depending on the nature and operations of their particular RTO. That came through strongly to us. Let me give you an example of that. For a commercial provider, the focus was very much in their language on attracting and handling learners. So it was on the outcomes for their learners. So that was their focus. That was their market. For industry and enterprise RTOs, they're a bit different because they're more industry-focused. So theirs was more on, in the case of enterprise ones, for instance, on enhancing the productivity for their parent organisation, or in the case of the industry, meeting the diverse industry-wide needs. So the emphases to which their leadership was directed differed according to the nature of their organisation, who their market was. I think a second thing, just to mention a second learning about leadership in general, I think we learnt that, or it was clarified for us, that leadership was very multi-dimensional. It was exercised up, down and across. And this, of course, differed, again, according to the nature of the RTO. For commercial ones, they were often small, and so leadership was in the hands of a small team. Upward leadership was obviously less less prominent, and leadership was more, the engagement was across the organisation, which was, as I say, generally small, or across particularly their market, their stakeholders, in order, I guess, to try and keep their supply of learners coming in. For the enterprises, they had leadership that was often up, because, very interesting, one of the interesting things was we learned how much they needed to keep on convincing their bosses, their leaders of the parent organisation, how important they were, how the RTO could keep contributing to or value add to their organisation. And for industry, just finally, their leadership was similar to the enterprise, except that their church, if you like, was not just a single organisation, but a whole industry. So they were one step removed. And so they had to operate across the industry and adopt a much broader perspective.
I find that a fascinating aspect about the different directions of leadership, and perhaps it talks to some of the tension between generic leadership and educational leadership that this report focuses on. So, Michelle, what did you learn about educational leadership in VET in particular?
Well, I think when we hear the term educational leadership, we most often think of the schooling sector, and we associate it with what, say, principals might do in terms of enhancing student outcomes. And what we learned from this study was that educational leadership actually does figure in these RTO leaders' thinking a lot, but it's not in the same ways as we would expect if we were, say, comparing them to principals who operate schools. What we found was that educational leadership were two things. It was a set of actions, it was a set of things that people did, but it also was a way of thinking and talking, a discourse, if you like, which was very much shaped by the context in which the RTO was operating. So when we talked to leaders in commercial registered training organisations, they talked about educational leadership as a set of values that underpinned the business imperative and sought to single them out. So the value that they placed on their students, on the people that came to learn in their organisations, and their passion for their development, that was how they embodied their understandings of educational leadership. When you talk to industry leaders in RTOs, in industry-based RTOs, they talked more about their educational leadership putting them ahead of the pack, being better than the other providers. And they talked about educational leadership being the product for them was putting out the best people that they could so that the industry and the enterprises in which these people worked were able to thrive and grow. So their educational leadership was directed towards making sure businesses remained viable because they actually were able to manage their workforce as well. For enterprise RTOs, educational leadership was best embodied in ideas about how they contributed to innovation and productivity for the enterprise. So they talked about this idea of, you know, if we were able to keep the business profitable, then our educational leadership was in fact doing the job that it was meant to do for the enterprise. It was also clear that educational leadership jostles for attention with other demands that these leaders place, the financial, business development and compliance regimes. All of these things jostle for their attention, and they openly admitted that sometimes educational leadership came a second best. However, just like learning at work can occur simultaneously, so too educational leadership can be intertwined with running the business. And in actual fact, some of our leaders actually argued that good educational leadership in fact shouldn't be seen as this idea of competing with the business imperative, but they're in fact, as the title of our report says, two sides of the same coin, and that coin is the quality coin, where a well-run RTO without attention to quality in terms of its educational outcomes won't be in business for too long, no matter how good their business operations are.
Roger, do these insights suggest there are unique challenges involved in being a leader in a private RTO?
We did find or single out three that were in common, and interestingly, they all start with C, so I suppose we could call them the three C's. credibility, compliance and change. And they are the sorts of issues that I guess any leader would need to cope with. But as you say, what was really intriguing were the sort of the different challenges that they faced. For commercial RTO leaders, for instance, they primarily talked in terms of challenges about staffing issues and finding the right people with the right skill mixes. I guess to a certain extent, they were not so tightly wedded to industry expertise as we might expect the other two types of RTOs to be. So they were more concerned with really good teachers with adult learning principles and being able to attract students and retain them and excite them and bring in the next new market and so on. And they talked a lot about giving space to their staff to develop their capacity and their potential and growing their staff and so on. For the enterprise RTO leaders, being embedded in a larger institution whose core business was not training, they had different sorts of issues. I mentioned the constant need to keep convincing their CEOs that they were worth something. But they also, in terms of looking across and downwards, they had to have credibility in the industry sense, because in one sense they were a worker in the organisation as well. They were often workers plucked out of the working part of the parent organisation to become trainers of their trade, of their skills. And so there was interesting dynamics there between them and other workers. In terms of, they talked about having to handle strong personalities in the workplace. Because there was that such close association with their fellow workers rather than students coming in from outside, as it were, they had different sorts of challenges to face to maintain their credibility. And in many cases, those in the workplace who considered themselves experienced workers felt themselves a bit threatened and challenged because their perceived place in the workplace as an expert might have been challenged a bit by these trainers. And lastly, for the industry people, looking industry-wide, they need to think about, in their leadership, how they could deliver value for money to the many different and quite diverse and usually quite small businesses operating across their industry, and convincing them that this outside body, RTO, could be of help to them. So managing staff, their staff, who had the right skill mix in terms of credibility and industry knowledge, as well as a headset for business development, as well as a very, very good understanding of what the total vet sector rules and regulations and compliance requirements were, because that's not industry's prime core business, they could be useful in that way, but the staff needed to be really, really up to speed on all that stuff. And if they were a group training company, as you might expect, they had the business of managing apprentices and trainees, and they needed to ensure that they completed on time so that they could get paid. And just meeting the whole of industry's shifting requirements was a challenge for them.
That is an overwhelming list of challenges. And I wonder, Michelle, as you identified those challenges and reflected on them, have you been able to distill any insights that could help leaders in private RTOs become more successful as leaders?
Yes. Well, I think one of the things we realise is that leading in private registered training organisations is a distinctive and somewhat highly specialised job, but it's not a role that we think it can be done by an individual. And in actual fact, that was one of the things that stood out a lot when we spoke to our interviewees. The notion of the heroic leader with all of the characteristics that, you know, they can forge ahead and have everyone trailing behind them really just doesn't hold water. While obviously individual leaders have particular sets of characteristics, it was more their capacity to be able to distribute leadership across their organisations that was so important. It's about how they enabled other people to enact leadership, so that leadership became a phenomenon that really imbued and was reflected in the culture and the structures of the organisation. And so the sort of advice that I would be giving leaders would be saying, look to how you can make the structures and cultures in your organisation work to deliver the sorts of outcomes that you need, and how to engage everyone in the business in that role of delivering both on the training and the business outcomes. And that it is as much imbued in the culture, in the way things are done, the way decisions are made, and how people are engaged in the process of learning at work and learning to facilitate people's development, as it is in actual embodied in any one individual.
So, Roger, in summary, what advice could you actually give to policymakers about leadership in private providers as they listen to these outcomes of your research?
Policymakers tend to lump all the RTOs in together, and I think there is quite a degree of difference between private RTOs and public ones, and in fact between the private RTOs themselves. If there's any message that comes out of our report, and I guess that's come through in this interview with you, no one size fits all, I suppose, is the phrase that everybody comes up with, isn't it?
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by the National Centre for Vocational Education Research. If you'd like to download the paper, Two Sides of the Same Coin, Leaders in Private Providers Juggling Educational and Business Imperatives, visit our website at www.ncver.edu.au.